On this week's show, clash-free doesn't mean issue-free, with Angel Say from Resolve.
Construction is the world's oldest industry, but spends the least amount of money on innovation. When we realized people outside the construction industry didn't typically associate construction with technology like virtual reality, apps, and robotics, we started The Contech Crew. Each week, we bring our listeners the latest in Contech news and interview the minds behind the technological innovations changing the way we build. So strap in, enjoy the ride, and geek out. It's Contech Crew time.
All right, we're back. Ariel Castillo, we are going to talk some VR, some BIM, some Clash. So who else am I going to sit down with than you to put the screws to Angel and ask about what about this Clash-free stuff?
Yeah, happy to be here, Jeff. Really excited. Every time we bring a BIM topic into the show, you know, it's kind of like a it's a nice way to stay in touch. You know, the word is not as popular as it used to be before, but it's always present. So we want to see what's happening. And I think Angel is going to be a great guest to show us what's going on.
I think he is. Angel, welcome to the show, man. How you doing?
Doing well. Excited to be here.
We're excited to have you. You know, we caught up at Groundbreak, one of the busiest booths. Lots of people checking out what you had. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun for people to learn a little bit more about you and what the team at Resolve is trying to do. All right. So we're back. Interview time. Angel, introduce yourself to the folks listening in. Kind of give them your backstory and we'll get to how you got here and what you're up to these days.
I recently talked to some project team members at Commodore Builders. They told me about their assistant superintendent spending an entire week copying from spec books into spreadsheets while their PM would lose sleep over missing something in his contracts. Does that sound familiar? Well, then they got Document Crunch. With Document Crunch's Crunch AI, they were automatically able to create project playbooks for kickoff. They were chatting with their project documents to quickly get reliable answers to questions. That superintendent isn't spending a week in her spec book, and the PM, he has the confidence of getting it right every time. And best of all, you can now find Document Crunch within Procore, right where so many of you already work. Check out this video at documentcrunch.com/contechcrew and sign up for a demo while you're there. You'll thank me for it.
All right. For those listening, I'm Angel Say. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Resolve. I have a background in mechanical engineering. I went to school out in New York City where I met my co-founder. I'll take it even further back than that. In high school, I sort of caught the bug for building and making things as part of FIRST Robotics, if anyone's familiar with that really cool program that engages high school students and really like getting their hands dirty. And that was my first taste of CAD, you know, was working in Autodesk Inventor and a little bit of SolidWorks at the time. Building and competing with robots. But then fast forward into college, you know, studied mechanical engineering and comp sci, doing a lot of robotics research as well. And then after graduating, I ended up going into the startup industry. I worked at a startup doing computer vision software. It was a factory automation startup where we were trying to build analysis software for the semiconductor industry. So I'd go into a lot of clean rooms and fabs, and you know, you got to suit up to go into a clean room. And that really planted one of the early seeds for what we're working on today, which we'll get to in a bit. Basically spending time in these clean rooms and seeing how frustrating it can be when manufacturing facilities aren't designed for the way you know, people intend to use them. But we'll dive into that later. That's a bit about my journey.
So that, I mean, that's pretty awesome. I don't know that many people know about FIRST Robotics. So I'm hoping some folks listening in will either steer their kids towards it or just go search it. And, you know, we see this as a software industry and the construction industry, like the earlier we get people's hands on not just the tools themselves, but the technology that facilitates the tools, we create people who want to either join the industry or build something for the industry. So it's really cool to see you get that early taste. So I'm interested, explain a little bit more about the clean room not being designed for the person. Construction gets sort of a bad rap that like, we're the only ones that do this to our people. But it's actually not true. Like every industry I go to, like if you go to food and beverage and you're like, the line's not built for me. I'm running from here to here. And, you know, so talk a little bit about what was wrong with those clean rooms and take that to where you are today.
Yeah, for sure. Part of it was just interacting with the people who are there, not 24/7, but all the time, right? Whether he's, like you said, a food and beverage facility, a fab, these manufacturing facilities, people are constantly working in them to produce a good, and they have to be, first of all, safe, and they have to be efficient. And sometimes they're not, right? And part of that is just that the design and construction process is so complex. And even on the owner side, some of the stakeholders who are signing off on these things aren't the people spending every single day out on the factory floor, or even the people doing maintenance and operations on them. And so when those folks come along and they realize, wow, who signed off on this? You know, like I got to go and take 10 extra minutes to do a simple task, or, you know, even in a clean room, especially like having to take the suit on and off is really cumbersome. And so you really have to make sure that these things are designed in a way that the people working in them are able to have high throughput, because ultimately you're trying to produce some good. And I think there's a bit of a disconnect there between the people who are out in that field, so to speak, right? And then also the back office of the folks designing and the folks making decisions and even coordinating to some degree. And that's something I'm really passionate about, is connecting those two.
That is awesome. So tell me where you are today, because you decided to leave that space, took a co-founder, and what problem are you solving today, and how are you approaching it?
Mm-hmm. So back in 2015, my co-founder and I started working on, at the time it was architectural visualization software. We got into Y Combinator out in Silicon Valley at the time, and that's really where we went headfirst into building a startup, learned a lot about, you know, what it's like to build software and sell into AEC, ultimately decided to move out of that space. It was around the time our software was called Insight VR. There was also Iris VR and Enscape. There was kind of an early wave of these visualization softwares. I think Enscape ended up doing amazing things there for that part of the workflow. But then we identified this gap that tied back to what I was doing in the clean room, where we saw an uptick in industrial construction. And that's only gotten, even higher velocity, higher demand with data centers, with the CHIPS Act. We're seeing a lot more of this, but we saw more of the general contractors we were talking to start to take on this type of work and want to solve this problem I'm talking about, where the owners that they were working for, they're operating these manufacturing facilities, you know, for, let's say, a 10 to 20 year life cycle. And that's really when they're paying the price of these inefficiencies. And so they don't just want a CapEx project that's going to be built on time and under budget. Obviously, that's really important, but they also want to make sure that they're not then punting that cost down the road to the OpEx life cycle, where you're going to have inefficient operations, or let's say in a data center, suddenly there's downtime. I think you all saw, you know, there's been stories where your favorite app goes down, and it turns out, and these are sometimes rumors, but turns out they couldn't access something to turn it off because, you know, there was some lock or whatever the story might be. And it could have been much easier to fix if it had been designed and simulated more accurately. So that's ultimately the problem we're working on, is we're saying, hey, how can we get people to think about the way that these buildings are operated during the coordination process, during the design process, when you're just moving bits instead of moving atoms? Because ultimately, you don't want to be catching design issues once you're out on the field. At that point, it's too late, right? We should be using technologies out on the field to accelerate the way we build and to make sure that we're building high quality things, but not to, at that point, assess, oh, hey, my robot caught that this valve is inaccessible. That should have been caught way, way further upstream.
You know, I love the moving bits and not atoms. I think that's a great line there. Give us an example, man. Like when you say that, put it out there for the field guys, the project managers, what are you trying to communicate with that line?
Mm-hmm. I think everyone's experienced this at some point, whether you're doing even like a home renovation or you're building a manufacturing facility, you go out to do your commissioning or even like, you know, late stage inspections, and someone says, hey, they look up at a Valve or a Duct or a VAV, and they say, why is that there, right? Like, how am I going to access that? And they're asking themselves this question because they're thinking about it from their perspective as the operations or maintenance folks about how they're going to have to do their job regularly. And it's a mission critical job. And at that point, they're having to move atoms, right? Like, either they have two options. Someone's got to rip it out of the wall, and now you've got a change order, you've got rework, you've got to reorder material. And that's just bad for everyone. Where the alternative is with our software. So what we're working on is an application called Resolve, which is a way for people to review their 3D models more efficiently, starting with off-the-shelf VR headsets like the Meta Quest, where now that person can ask that same question. They can look up and look at that duct, except it's a virtual duct, right? But they're walking through it as if they're doing that inspection, and they say, hey, why is that there? Someone says, you know, good point. Let's see what we can do about it. And then you move it in the model, and now you're not going to build it incorrectly. And so with our VR software, really our mission is to try to bring a lot of those late stage questions earlier into the process to make sure we can fix these things. You know, as you said, you like to hear as bits, not physical atoms in the real world, because at that point, it's just more expensive and frustrating for everybody involved.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And we've said this for years, like, digital rework is still rework. But when we say that here, it's more about, you know, everybody having to remodel everything and redetail everything and redraw everything. That's rework that we really shouldn't have. We should be having that exact experience that you're talking about. And I'm interested in, you know, the not only the accessibility of the devices, but the difference in the approach. Because when you started this, you talked a little bit about Enscape, who did wonderful things for visualizing what an environment will look like, right? But we call that Hollywood BIM. In some cases, that seems like a negative term, but we needed it, right? There is a need to understand a level of visualization inside the environment. But you guys are now taking a new workflow in that next step. How are you approaching that, and how is it different than what you were thinking about with Enscape and Iris VR and where they were? Because they fit real strong where they are, but now you've got a new group of people.
Yeah, I love this question. And I also love the term Hollywood BIM. I think it gets hate, maybe rightfully so, but like you said, there's a place for it, right? Whether it's you're bidding or you're just trying to, like, fundraising for healthcare projects or schools, like, it's a critical part of that. And that's where you need to be showing off nice assets. And we're taking something, you know, we kind of identified this gap, which is who's doing the VR and the visualization for something like Navisworks, right? That's how we think about our workflow, is we want to augment the workflows that are happening in Navisworks or in Revisto, these, you know, coordination processes where it's not about how amazing something looks. It's about, are all the details there and are they rendered efficiently and accessible? And is all the metadata there, right? And so we care a lot about, you know, the underlying BIM properties, because and that's what the I in BIM is for, that I can click on a pipe. And if I'm someone doing a model review, I'll know, is that, you know, is that hot water? Is it return supply? What is it? Not just some pipe that I'm looking at for the sake of looking at a pipe. So that's part one of our approach, right? Is saying, hey, this is not your visualization software to try to blow the socks off of someone and get them to invest in your project. It's for people in the thick of coordination, but specifically for people who aren't spending all day in Navisworks. And the big unlock for us was, you know, had devices like this guy, the Meta Quest 3. Before that, it was the Quest 2 and then the Quest 1. And before that, the Oculus Go. When we first tried Google Cardboard back in the day, that was a light bulb moment for us where we knew that was not the final form, but we thought, oh man, this stuff's going to be accessible. You're running it on like a $300 phone. You just need the optics and the sensors. And sure enough, you know, that came true. A Quest 3 is cheaper than some of the monitors that the VDC people I talk to are buying. And when you think about it that way, right, you're buying monitors to improve the coordination process. Why wouldn't you invest in these other you know, types of displays? That's really all a VR headset is. It's a display, hence HMD, it's just a head-mounted display. why would you invest in that if it gives you visibility into your project as if it were already built? One of the things I like to tell people is, as a company, our product today is a VR app, but really our mission is to just give people in construction superpowers using technology. And right now the superpower that we're focused on is getting people to walk through buildings before they're built, or if they're not, you know, geographically co-located with the building. I can travel to a building in Europe or somewhere else in the US just by putting my headset on and walking through. And with the $300 headsets, it's more accessible than ever. You know, you don't need a big computer. Just before we kind of kicked off the conversation, we were all lamenting, you know, the woes we've had with these gaming laptops and GPUs and CPUs. And, you know, we're pretty technical people, but the audience we're trying to help out, they're not spending all day with gaming computers or Navisworks. And so their patience for this stuff is a lot lower. And that makes sense, right? They just want to get in and they want to see the building and they want to find issues and get back to work because they're doing mission critical stuff. And so now you've got these devices connected to Wi-Fi, download the Resolve app, open your model, and you could be walking through your building in as quick as like 10 minutes from when you uploaded it.
Angel, you said a couple interesting there, and I'm taking a couple words and connecting it to come up with a question for you. So you talked about a specific audience, right? Mm-hmm. And then you also mentioned issues, and it brings me to this eternal conversation and non-stopping of, it's going to take forever to clean the whole model, like have a clash-free model. But then, you know, this episode is basically named after, you know, our talks into clash-free versus issue-free. So just wondering, you know, what's the difference there?
For sure. We think that a lot of the coordination process today and what Navisworks is used for is really focused on the construction outcomes, which makes total sense, right? It's about constructability. It's about being clash-free. It's about logistics and making sure that you can build the project without a hitch from the construction perspective. But the gap we're trying to bridge is also, hey, while you're thinking about those things, we need to make sure we're thinking about the operability, the safety, the maintenance issues that are also part of the process, because you could build a completely clash-free project, but then when you're walking through it and getting ready for commissioning, if there are major things that you miss from a operations accessibility or safety perspective, you're going to have a bunch of rework, right? And so your zero clash model, it's a vanity metric at that point, right? If the actual outcome is still a bunch of change orders and additional materials. And so that's really, you know, the heart of when we say clash-free is not issue-free, is we need to make sure we're taking a holistic approach to coordination, where we're thinking about all the types of things that come up, not just constructability, but also the things that are catching a lot of projects off guard during commissioning.
See, I love this because you're talking about the user experience. You're hitting on this from beginning to end. You're talking about that end user experience. And we know this, 20% of the cost is in construction, 80% is in operation. But what we don't actually like really focus on is all of the experience for the owner, for the project owner, is in the operations of that environment. And I'm going to go off on a tangent here because user experience is driving me crazy right now in so many different worlds. I just stayed in a place that it's a rental, right? And they must have bought everything online. It looks beautiful. I stayed there with multiple people. Every one of us tripped over, hit something, and even we have two broken toes from this environment, because somebody bought it visually looking at it and didn't experience what it was going to be like once it was all placed into the environment and you had to walk around it. Like, nobody thought, hey, you're supposed to take your shoes off in a nice place like this. And so all these little steel bars and cool little bottoms of fixtures are going to hit you. Like, everyone has to start thinking about how the people who are going to interact, that's not safe. If that was a job site, that's a failure, right? If that's a clean room or a manufacturing floor, that's a problem. Right? This is one of those things that I just, right now, I think, like, I know my whole 2025 is about dirty boots and getting people in the room who do the work, et cetera, but we got to lean on user experience. Things have to work as you, IT does this all the time. Ariel, I know you can agree with this. How often does IT say, well, you're going to use this app because I'm already paying for it and it does the things you do. And then when you go to use it, you're like, it took me 37 clicks to do this. Yes, it does it, but I'm just not going to do this, right? Like, it's just not working for me. We have to switch and shift our focus into that end user experience. But the cool part is, Angel, what you're doing can do that and make it accessible. The problem is, and I wonder if you see this through your customers, and this is where I want to shift this back to you, is like, is there a particular type of customer that actually has learned to care about that? Because I don't know that enough of them actually care about that. And when I say that, I mean, I went to an FM conference and I started asking, how many of you are at the pre-construction process? There was like two hands. So I'm wondering, like, how are you going to get this to them? Or are you seeing it? Or is there a type of client that's doing this?
Yeah, 100%. So I'll take this in steps. So the first thing I'll say is we have really solid traction. We have almost 150 customers ranging from, engineering firms to GCs to some of those owner operators directly who have seen how well it works after doing a Resolve walkthrough with one of their GCs that then they say, I want to deploy this on my portfolio, right? Like, there's no reason I shouldn't be walking through all these buildings. The second proof point we have is we also have, you have so many case studies, including there's a group at Stanford, SIFI. They do a bunch of awesome research out there, and they actually were able to compare two identical buildings, one where they used Resolve to walk through the building. It was like a $600 million project, and one where they didn't use Resolve. And in the one where they used Resolve, they found a bunch of operations access issues. 93% of those issues were not caught in the one that only used Navisworks. So we're starting to see, you know, that this has actual quantifiable impact. The last thing I'll say here about like where we're seeing this take off, it's definitely starting with more industrial projects. And if we want to generalize it even more, heavy MEP really is where this is really shining, because those are projects where the end user experience is a little less qualitative and subjective, right? So if you take, let's say, a residential project or a retail project, you can say, oh, you know, I can feel what this space feels like and I know X, Y, and Z, but it's really subjective, right? Like what feels good to one person might not feel good to another. On MEP projects, where you need access to specific valves or specific types of equipment, it's clear cut. It's either like, I can access this or I cannot, or this is a head knocker or it isn't. And so we're also seeing those are the high stake projects right now, where if you get that stuff wrong, it means data center downtime, right? Or extended downtime, or it means having to shut down a food processing facility so you can clean something out, and something that instead should take 20 minutes end up taking 5 hours, and now you halted the production of some good. So that's really where we're seeing a lot of the traction right now, is these types of, you know, MEP projects, hyperscale, colo data centers, water treatment facilities, pharma, automobile, battery facilities. I think you get the picture.
Yeah. And Angel, I want to kick this, or Ariel, I want to kick this to you for a question before I do. The coincidence there that I see is those are almost all some sort of negotiated collaborative project where the outcomes of the overall building are actually all, you're somewhat incentivized to do this together to operate. And I think that's a critical component of that. But Ariel, you had a question. Go for it.
Yeah. So you know, I think that's great that what you mentioned there. And let's say that we have the ideal project. You know, we have this heavy MEP facility, and we also have the tools. We're using Resolve. What would you suggest, or what's the recommended workflow? What's the interaction? What do you think, you know, if you need to walk somebody through, what's the ideal way to do this?
Oh, okay. Well, I'll start with the workflow. I think it's important to touch on how easy it is now. And I say this because I was listening to an episode recently. I think you had someone from Gamma on recently, and they were talking about how there's a lot of baggage in the industry from trying VR and AR like 5+ years ago that we have to undo, right? And this is not to knock on products like the HoloLens or the Vive. They were great for the time, but they were clunky, like no doubt. And it was cumbersome to set up. And that's why these things kind of got entrenched into the Hollywood BIM world, because people were only using it when they really needed to, right? Like when you had to get your in-house Unreal developers out to create this fancy walkthrough and you were going to set up the sensors. But now the technology has come a long way. You've got these $300 headsets. You don't need a computer. And the technical challenge we had to solve was, how do we get a 10-gigabyte Navisworks file to work on a $300 headset? A lot of people think it's not possible, or a lot of companies' answer is, oh, split up the model and then you're good. But Ariel, to your point, we want to make the workflow as seamless as possible, right? And so we focused on two things early on, is one, making sure the model just works out of the box, no matter how big it is. And so we have this proprietary rendering tech that we call the Wellington engine, where you can look at a model on a web viewer, on a crappy laptop. You can look at it on a $300 headset, both online and offline. It's not like we're rendering in the cloud. We also have a desktop app. And then we also have the integrations with ACC, with Procore, and direct uploads. But I say that because the setup process is really easy. So you come onto Resolve, you log in, you choose your integration, you pick your model. And then when you're updating the model on your common data environment, it's automatically updating on Resolve. There's no, oh, we have a big meeting tomorrow, like make sure to do the export for VR. That's all gone. That's a thing of the past, right? And so I'm saying all this stuff because, and I see Jeff laughing, like this resonates, right? Like people used to deal with the hardware setup, with the rush to the meeting tomorrow. And we just wanted to be like, hey, we've got a Navisworks like thing that we're looking at. Why don't we pop into the headset and resolve it really quickly? No pun intended. So that's that phase. And in terms of then, like, how do you actually deploy it? I think it's augmenting the process you already have with your Navisworks process, Revisto, you know, whatever coordination process you already have. People are already supposed to be doing these types of operations and maintenance access reviews. They're just a little cumbersome. And what Jeff said earlier about, you know, people in FM not really being part of the pre-con process or coordination process, that's true. And a lot of what I've heard is because they just say, I'll just leave it into the field because I don't want to sit in an Navisworks meeting where we're just going through clashes. That's not pertinent to them. But now we're giving them an avenue where we can say, hey, you're going to go in there and you're actually going to find stuff that you're used to seeing, because it's literally just like walking around the site. You just point to stuff, and we have AI that does speech to text. So you can say, Valve, inaccessible, or I have a question, you know, about this transformer that's here. Super, super simple. It doesn't have to be overcomplicated. Pick those like milestones that you already have in your review process and add a VR walkthrough.
And that's critical because it's easy, right? They don't have to know Navis. They don't have to feel stupid, you know. And listen, one of the problems that people don't give credit to in learning something new or getting somebody into something new, like an FM into a digital walkthrough of some sort, whether it's Navisworks or others, they're going to feel stupid for a minute. They're not stupid people, right? But it's new. All of us, when we go to learn something new, feel stupid for a second. And so that's why the user experience has to be easy, has to be accessible. I laughed because, like, pre-call, we were talking about the studies that, you know, Buck, our former host here, and Lonnie Compton did on, you know, processing models and doing all that stuff, and like having to remember the night before to kick something off so it processed overnight, so everybody had everything. And it's so cool to see how we do with this process. So now you're giving these FMs an opportunity to, you know, jump in, not feel stupid, walk through in a way that works. So talk to me a little bit about, you know, how easy you've made that. You have an AI for walkthrough, you have an AI for those processes to kind of speech to text. How hard has it been to get them in it? And then what's been some of the feedback you get as you get them in it?
So one of the most counterintuitive things to us has been how some of the most like tech averse folks end up loving Resolve, right? And it's funny because like when we talk to VDC and BIM teams who are still, you know, they are power users of the app. They still love it. It gives them a way to walk through the model in a way that's not possible with the tools they have today. They sometimes think, oh yeah, you know, like Bob or whoever it is, they're never going to want to get in there. But then they put them in the headset and they don't want to put it down, right? And I think it's because it's the closest thing they have to their day-to-day workflow out on the site, right? Where they're just like, oh yeah, safety issue there. I got to get ahead of it before we get fined or whatever it might be. And it's so close to reality. And to your point, yes, sometimes people are going to feel like novices as you adopt new tech. But I think what I like to remind everyone is we're all experts in something, right? Like if you're doing back office BIM work, you're probably not spending a lot of time in the field, and that's okay. But you have to be open then to feedback from those people who are spending a lot of time out in the field. And same thing with those people. People out in the field, they're not spending all day with Navisworks. Again, that's fine. That's not their core competency. And so we're taking that a step further to say, okay, now there's a whole other group of people with field experience of a different kind, both either construction or maintenance. Let's get that knowledge into the BIM process. I think there was another episode you were talking about, like, it's time to, I think, like, realize the full value of BIM or something along those lines. And I think the way we do that is getting more of those, you know, like what's tribal knowledge into the BIM process. That stuff has not been digitized yet, but it is still a really key part of the entire building life cycle. And that's where we see stuff like VR, AR, AI bridging that gap is let's get tribal knowledge that is still really, really valuable into these digital processes.
Yeah, I'm wondering because you're saying that, and I think there's an opportunity for you to democratize a lot of that feedback you're getting from FM and others that are walking, so that as part of clash detection is learned over time, what can and can't be done, but it's never been able to, at the time, figure out where a valve is, where an access panel is, whether this is going to be, I love that you said a head knocker. People forget that, like, you put it in the wrong place and a person's going to walk through and hit their head. Like, that's what industrial facilities, water treatment, everything has. And you have to think about, like, okay, these, and that's critical, right? That those are safety issues going down the road. So it's super cool to see this getting there and then democratizing into it, because I can see you taking that data and starting to feed it back into the engine and being like, look, we already see that this valve can't be, nine times out of 10, this valve can't be accessed. There's no room for this panel. So Ariel, I'm wondering, you know, what are some of the questions you might have? Because I mean, I'm just loving the accessibility and the democratization.
I just wanted to add, Jeff, that the key into democratizing this type of technologies is that technology should not be about navigating complicated software, right? And the better tools out there, then we can use, just like Angel was saying, we can use their knowledge to add value where it matters the most. So think about it, like if you had to break a model and then you had to have this specific VR headset, and then you have to go into this processing in order to be able to like review it for a little bit, and then it changes and you have to do it again, you don't want to do that, right? And I think that's the Achilles heel of where VR and AR were 5 years ago. So solutions like this, I think that, again, they're key and they're really important in order to improve the mass adoption of this type of technology.
So I'm interested, Angel, looking forward, what do you see and where do you see this process going? Like, you're really, I mean, obviously, startups, et cetera, you're looking for growth and adoption, but you've got some of that traction. So jump ahead and give us a look into the future of where you think Resolve is headed and some of the problems you might be attacking.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think for us, one of the big ones is still accessibility. We want to make it more accessible, right? As easy as possible for people to get the most out of the tool. It's a little bit counterintuitive sometimes because, you know, sometimes people will look at their product metrics and they'll think, oh, you got to get them to spend more time in the app. That's a little bit untrue for our VR app, where we actually think if people are spending less time in the app, but finding as many issues as they currently are, that's good, right? Like that is efficiency. And to your point, Jeff, in the long term, we'd love for even us to be able to suggest and say, hey, we found these things. Here's some suggested fixes. You don't even have to do anything. Or maybe you're just going to use the app to validate these things that we're telling you. So, you know, that angle is one that we're really excited about. Sort of, you know, maybe the buzzword would be like more spatial intelligence, where instead of having the people look for it, they're working with some sort of intelligent system to just say, yeah, thumbs up, thumbs down on a potential fix. I think there's also a lot of interesting, there's still a lot of future potential for AR. We get asked this all the time, right? Like, do we have an AR app? We have some lightweight AR with these new devices. You know, you've got the cameras on the front to do color pass through, but that's not the same as like a HoloLens or a Magic Leap on the job site. It's a very different style of AR. But I'm seeing some really interesting things, especially like Meta Ray-Bans, where you have these like assistants that can help you just retrieval of information or validation of what you're looking at. I think that's really exciting. And we might actually have this revolution where that becomes the AR that everyone wears on the job site before we even have displays, you know, overlaying information. And I think that's fine because the way we see it is, things like the AR everyone dreams about, where you have a helmet telling you exactly where to install things, that accelerates our speed to build things. But what we're focused on right now is, let's make sure we're building the right thing. Because I don't want the world to build more stuff faster if it's the wrong thing, right? Like, that's only going to create a big mess. So, like, let's make sure we're building the right things. And then let's, like, go hard. And I think we can parallelize that, but that's sort of the thing we're focused on is like, let's make sure these robots, the like reality capture, it's all headed in the right direction. So that's my thoughts on some of the things that are exciting in the future.
I fully agree. I think that's your mic drop moment. We had this talk with Charlie Dunn and you guys are really focused on the key portion of planning, right? We always want to get shovels in the ground. We always want to get moving into construction, but over and over that is creating problems. And so by going through planning and working on those bits instead of those atoms, we can make sure that the robots, the people, the equipment is all driving in the right direction. And I think that's an awesome opportunity. And to go to your point, like, not all metrics are created equal. And I don't want an FM person being like, yeah, I spent 12 hours in the model. Like,
right.
Probably because you were lost in the basement and couldn't make it to where anything else is. And you don't want to tell us that. And how cool would it be to fire up your VR headset and to have Resolve saying, hey, here's 10 things that we think you should look at. Click, go there. You know, this is sort of the AI style, right? We see this with Document Crunch and others where you're like, go to the part in the contract. Now we're going to the part in the model. And it's like, yeah, that valve's going to be a problem. Check, review it. On to the next one. You can jump around to the 10 places. And if you're 10 issues, 10 minutes, and you're out, powerful. Awesome to see. So great to sit down with you. I'm really excited because, you know, you mentioned Alex Sidoroff from Gamma AR being on, and Charlie and you. These technologies had to go through their growing pains. But I think it's always, you know, we got that hype cycle, right? Inflated expectations down to the trough of disillusionment. And I think we are really on that path to realizing the power of what we can do. And we need more people to get involved with it. So I recommend everybody check out Angel, check out Resolve. Angel, thank you so much. Tell people where they can go find out a little bit more about you.
You can go to www.resolvebim.com and you can get started. If you have a Quest, our app is on the Quest Store. You can download it today, jump into our sample project, or upload a model and get started within like 5 minutes. The last thing I'll say here, I know we've talked a lot about FM, but this is also like, there's a lot of value for the VDC, GC, BIM folks. Like, I just want to recap by saying, talk to a lot of folks in the space who say, finally, when they're sitting down with FM people in those Navisworks review, instead of silence when they ask for feedback, they're getting actual feedback, not just nodding heads as they fly around a Navisworks model, or people say, oh, fly up higher, you know, let me see those pipes. Instead, it's just, hey, here, let's go together. Give me your feedback. It's that easy.
Awesome. Ariel, always great to sit down with you. I'm sure you enjoyed this one. It's, you know, we're getting BIM and VR into the reality, right?
There, start reviewing models. Don't think about the AI. I thought, Jeff, we're going to do an episode without saying AI, but then, you know, you mentioned it the last couple of minutes. But hey, you can get the tool, you know, use what's available right now and make sure that the people doing the work are leveraging, you know, an issue-free model.
Thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for our interview with Angel Say. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to the show, visit thecontentcrew.com. This is The Content Crew, signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.